You ready? Do you remember some funny men from years ago called the Marx Brothers? Anybody remember them? Groucho Marx once famously said, "Marriage is a great institution, but who wants to live in an institution?" That is a backhanded comment, isn't it? Actually, the God of the Bible values marriage massively. He values marriage without any reservations whatsoever. And what we've got to do is learn to value what he values. 3 years ago, there was a young couple who were in our church. You may or may not remember them. They were living together and they wanted to get baptized. And so would you believe they actually got married, baptized and confirmed all in the space of 3 weeks. They had learned to value what God values. And in two young people like that, God values marriage. So they got married. And can I say, while you may not be married yourself, marriage is something that every single person here has an interest in. You may have children, or you may have great grandchildren or grandchildren who are married or who are thinking about getting married. You may have friends or other family who are married and you might want to know how to encourage them. You may even get married yourself one day. You may not know anything about it today, but you might be getting married one day. So I want to say this subject matters to every single one of us. But the context is 1 Peter, and hopefully some of you have been here for all of 1 Peter over recent weeks. The context is that the Christian view about things isn't the main one anymore. It isn't the important one anymore. It certainly isn't the popular one anymore. There's a new establishment in town. And that means there's not a lot of room for Jesus anymore. To live Christianly today is about as difficult as it has ever been. To live Christianly in certain areas of life today is downright painful. And when that happens, when that's the case, it is so tempting, isn't it, to shut up or to curl up into a ball or to give up. And Peter says, don't do that. Don't do that. The answer to being pushed to the sidelines, the answer to feeling like an exile, is live such good lives. Respond to hostility with good works. Seek the peace and prosperity of the city to which I have carried you into exile. Do you remember that was Jeremiah 29? We looked at it way back in September. Live such good lives. Live such good lives that people will glorify God. That's the great theme of 1 Peter. We're going to put it up on a slide, please, just so we've got it in our heads. That is the big headline of 1 Peter. And then today, Peter, he drills right down into the subject of marriage. Just one area today to look at, marriage. So we're going to go deep, deep, deep. Okay, this is going to be controversial, it is going to be countercultural, it is going to be subversive, it is different, but we've got to try and understand what he's saying, so I'm going to dive straight in the famous words of REM, catch me if I fall, please. First, what does it look like to be a godly wife? Second, what does it look like to be a godly husband? But please remember what I said. We have all got an interest in this. So even if you are not a wife or a husband, please, please do listen in because you are going to need to know this. So we're in the second reading. It'd be great if you had the second reading, please, in front of you. Wives, what does it look like to have a godly marriage which glorifies God? What does it look like to have a godly marriage that glorifies God and wins other people to Christ? Maybe even your husband, who at the moment doesn't seem to be at all interested. If you're in that situation, This is a word for you. It really, really is. And it seems to me that Peter shows us what it looks like with a series of contrasts. What does it look like to be a godly wife? Well, it doesn't look like this, but it does look like this. And here's the first one. Are you ready? We're going to put it up. Not words. Not words, but willing submission. And we've got to be really, really careful because of that word, submission. We've got to understand something really important that Jez touched on a couple of weeks ago. Submission in the Bible never, never means, nor does it ever imply, inferiority. It never means inferiority. But in our culture, it has become such a very loaded term. We assume that if someone submits, it makes them less. We assume that if someone submits, that it demeans them, it diminishes them. And yet, that's not actually our experience. So yesterday, England played Australia at rugby. You know, I even started feeling sorry for the Australians yesterday. Not for long. In a rugby match, both sets of players submit to the referee. It's one of the big selling points of rugby, isn't it? You don't argue with the ref, you submit. Does that mean the players are in some way inferior to the ref? No, it doesn't, does it? It is possible to submit without in any way being inferior. I don't know if you ever catch the train, but if you go any distance at all, you will submit to the man checking the tickets. He asks, you give. That is an act of submission, but it is not an act of inferiority. Do you feel inferior to the ticket inspector? Sometimes when you go down to the hall for coffee, you have to queue, don't you? Did you know that queuing is an act of submission? You submit to the person queuing in front of you. Does that make you, in some sense, inferior to the person in front of you? Do you think it does? I don't think so. Another great picture for this is the Trinity. Jesus the Son, God the Father. They are completely and utterly equal. They are totally, totally equal. And yet the Son submits to the Father. Jesus came not to do his will, but the will of him who sent me. That's what Jesus says. We've made submission to mean inferior when it doesn't. And the truth is, we're involved in many acts of willing submission, which we're happy to do. So with that in mind, what is Peter saying here? So would you look with me at verse 1? Verse 1, second reading, verse 1. He says, wives, this is it, wives, in your marriage, you need to live in a way that points your husband to Christ so that if he doesn't believe, he may be won over without words by your behavior. Not words, but willing submission. And I think that means focus on being someone who doesn't just argue with him or demean him or preach to him. Focus on being someone who affirms your husband as leader in the home, as leader in the community or the school or whatever it might be. Focus on being someone who shows proper respect and trust. That is the Christ-following way for a Christian wife to relate to a husband. But please, let's be really clear what submission doesn't mean. Submission doesn't mean that you never challenge or you never confront. So Peter's example in this reading is Sarah in the Old Testament. Sarah was married to Abraham. Sarah submitted to Abraham, but she certainly spoke her mind. If you look through Genesis, she challenged and she discussed. Not words, but willing submission. And we've got to understand one last really important thing on this. It's really, really important. Submission in the Bible is only submission if you choose to do it. Nowhere are husbands commanded to make their wives submit. That is not submission. That is tyranny. Submission in the Bible is only submission if it is freely and willingly given. Next contrast. Can we put it up on the screen? Next contrast, and this is verse 2. Not sin, but reverence to God. And the point is, living out submission mustn't lead us into sin. If your husband or anyone else wants you to join them in their sin, Peter makes it clear all the way through his letter, if that happens, you have reached the limit of godly submission. Better not to submit than to sin. Better to suffer than to sin. Third contrast, verses 3 and 4. This is really important. This is really, really important. If you don't like anything else, please listen to this. Not outward appearance, but beauty that lasts. Peter is not saying no to a nice haircut. He's not saying no to gold rings or gold watches. He's not saying no to expensive clothes. But he is asking the question, what do you value? What do you value? What God values, verse 4, is inner beauty. What God values is Christ-like character. What God values is the fruit of the Spirit. And that is not the kind of beauty which our culture values and puts on a catwalk. What we're talking about here is a beauty which is much more restrained, which is much less flashy. But please make no mistake, we're talking about a beauty which is visible, but which will last forever. It has an unfading quality. And here's the point, really. Here's the point. Whatever the world tells you, whatever the world tells you, it will not be your hair, it will not be your jewelry, it will not be your clothes that wins anyone to Christ. It will be the unfading beauty of a quiet and gentle spirit. That is what God values. And somehow, in the midst of everything the world tells you, you need to learn to value it too. We all need to learn to value it too. Men and women, we all need to value this kind of beauty. What does it look like to be a godly wife? Here comes the last contrast, verses 5 and 6. Not fear, but hope in God. Okay, here's what I think it means. Sarah submitted to Abraham. But what I think she's really being commended for here is that her submission to Abraham flowed out of her submission to God. And Peter is saying that our submission should not be motivated by fear of the one to whom we submit. We are to submit because of our hope in God. That's one of the great big themes in 1 Peter. The Christian hope. That is the motivation, says Peter. Set your hope on the grace to be brought to you when Jesus Christ is revealed at his coming. That's what he said back in chapter 1. So that's the character of a godly wife. And Peter's point, as it is in so much of this letter, okay, please, please listen to this. Peter is saying, if you do these things, in God's grace, your husband may notice your Christ-like character. He may start to value it the way that God values it, and so glorify God on the day he visits us. Willing submission, reverence to God, beauty that lasts, not giving in to fear, that is the sort of behavior that will make an impact. Do you know, it means if we're doing that, then our lives become the evangelistic event. Not church, not a special meeting, our lives become the evangelistic event. So that's wives, okay? What about husbands? Well, verse 7. Verse 7, and another contrast. Might need to go on to the next slide here. Husbands are to be not self-seeking, but considerate and respectful. To respect your wife is to honour her. To live considerately means to know her and to take responsibility for knowing her. When Peter says, and you might want to look down to this, to verse 7. When Peter says, your wife is the weaker partner, I think that can only mean in general terms of physical strength. Please let me tell you something that is so important. Wherever you look in the Bible, God loves and he blesses the so-called weak things of this world. Weakness has huge value to God. It really, really does. Your wife may, in some sense, be the weaker partner physically, but in the Bible, that is an exalted and a lifted up position. And therefore, all the more reason to love, honour, and bless her. Now, as I've thought about this, I reckon there are two big ways in which husbands fall short of what Peter says in verse 7. Two areas where husbands can be self-seeking rather than considerate and respectful. First, the husband who exploits, who dominates, who demands, who undermines, or ignores, or even abuses his wife. Sadly, all through history, there have been examples of the tyrannical husband. And we've got to see how totally, totally unacceptable that is. And it doesn't make any sense, because these verses in chapter 3, they flow straight out of what Peter has said in chapter 2. And everything he says in chapter 2 is based on the example of Jesus and his sacrificial suffering for us. He suffered for you, says Peter. He did not retaliate. He himself bore our sins. By his wounds you have been healed. That is the immediate background. There's no way these verses in chapter 3 can be used to justify or in any way to excuse dishonoring or dominating or domineering male behavior. So please, don't hear any of that in these verses. If you're hearing that in these verses, then we have put it there. Not God. We put it there. The men put it there. But the other area where husbands can fall short of verse 7, which I think is probably much more common today, actually, certainly in our culture, is the selfish or the disinterested husband. The husband who lives only for the quiet life. The husband who takes no responsibility, who will not honour his wife by leading and sharing the burden of decision making. That is not the character of a godly husband. That is not the character of a godly husband. Peter says, here's the thing. He says, if husbands will live out, if we will live out the godly character of verse 7, he says right at the end, nothing will hinder your prayers. So that's the incentive. Nothing will hinder your prayers. But it comes obviously with a warning, doesn't it? Because implied in that is that if husbands fail to live out verse 7, then their prayers will be hindered. God will not be prepared to listen to them. Friends, in all things, in your work, in your home, in your street, in your marriage, or in your singleness, Peter says, live such good lives among the pagans, among the unbelievers, that they will see your good lives and they will glorify God. That is the mission strategy of 1 Peter. It really is. And that's how it applies to your marriage. Let me just finish, please, with a little story. John Piper is an American pastor and author, and he's well worth reading, actually. Written lots of very good short books. He and his sister were mainly brought up by their mum, because his dad was a travelling evangelist and he was away from home for weeks on end. And John Piper says this. He says, here's what I learned. I learned a biblical truth before I even knew it was in the Bible. He said, I learned that there is leadership which does not demean a wife. And I learned that there is submission that is not remotely connected to inferiority. Rather, he says, my mother and my father, they put their hope in God, and they believed that obedience to his word would create the best of all families. And it did. And so he says, I encourage you with all my heart. And I just want to echo that. I encourage you with all my heart. Consider these things with great seriousness. And do not let the world squeeze you into its mold. If 1 Peter says anything at all, it says, do not let the world squeeze you into its shape, its mold. Can I lead us in a prayer?